mashed potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Winchester, Bilal, A New Breed of Hero, Scorched Earth, and A Fantastic Woman. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Geostorm. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
No huge news stories, but a couple interesting ones. We got our first set photo leaked from Brie Larson as Ms. Marvel, as Captain Marvel in the Captain Marvel movie. What I found funny about it was just the reaction. This is always a reaction from set photos. They're like, this is a stupid costume. What is going on? She looks dumb. Well, it's a candid shot of her, and she's just sort of walking, and it's this goofy kind of green armor, but it looks like it fits in line with all the other costumes that you have in the Marvel movie. It's very consistent with even the stuff that, like, the Black Widow wears. And the hair's not great because it's a candid photo. It's not meant to be a actual publicity still. And I remember the same thing happened with Thor. Before Thor came out, they leaked out some of the character photos for the costume department. And people were complaining about how goofy and silly and cartoonish the costumes were for Thor. And then you went and saw Thor, and yeah, if you want to fixate on that, it's a little bit goofy. But Thor, I thought everyone's costume looked fine in Thor. And this dovetails into, and we'll talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp in a minute, but people are now complaining that the Wasp has breastplates over Evangelina Lilly's chest, and the constant complaint about boob armor is ridiculous. We saw this with the complaints about the same thing when they did the Power Rangers movie. They said, oh, well, they have breastplates. Why? You know, you gotta put them somewhere. And like, if you're gonna put, like, say, Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, she's not exactly thin in terms of her upper torso, we'll say. She is a bit chesty. They've gotta go somewhere. And unless you're going to, like, completely strap them down, which is uncomfortable, you got to at least fit them into the suit. So I think that's just ridiculous. That would be like complaining about the size of Thor's arms in his armor. I mean, Chris Hemsworth beefs up for this sort of thing. The other thing that I think is interesting in terms of news, something we haven't got. We haven't gotten a trailer for Solo, A Star Wars Story. That thing comes out on Memorial Day weekend. That's less than 4 months away. It is rare for a huge movie, like a summer tentpole movie, to not get a trailer this far out. Less than 4 months away. I mean, they dropped Star Wars trailers a year before. And I think this is calculated because I think they didn't want to interfere with The Last Jedi and sort of the promotion for that, because this is completely outside of that story. So Disney and Lucasfilm said, hey, everyone knows this is coming, so let's not worry about hyping this. Let's do a quick hype for it. Or wouldn't it be interesting if they never dropped a trailer for Solo? The fact that they didn't drop a trailer gets people talking about there not being a trailer. It could also end up being something that they just dropped something a month beforehand, kind of like what happened that Paramount did with 10 Cloverfield Lane. That movie was done completely under the radar of The Force Awakens, and then they dropped a trailer for it. And nobody knew it was coming out, and the trailer hit like a month before the release date. Though the buzz is that during the Super Bowl, there's going to be a Solo trailer. So, you know, who knows? We'll see. There's an interesting piece of news that came out of Sundance. Generally, I don't cover Sundance because 98% of the movies that come out of Sundance, you never hear from again. They're either smaller films that eventually get in on demand or very limited release, if a release at all, or just straight to video, if at all. And that's it. There's occasionally a blip that comes out. But the thing that's interesting is in the past, Amazon and Netflix have actually acquired movies at Sundance, and neither of them did this time around. I think that's because they're saying, you know what? We're going to put our money and our effort into our self-generating new shows. Stuff like Stranger Things and, well, the last bit of House of Cards or any of these other TV shows that actually there's data to come out that says that people keep Netflix because of their original programming, not necessarily their original movies. Throwing more money into Adam Sandler movies isn't a good thing necessarily for Netflix to do. And on top of it, look at a movie like Mudbound. And I talked about it last week. And while I didn't like it, it got nominations. It got a lot of buzz. This movie had a theatrical release, but it was very, very minor. It pretty much premiered on Netflix. And because of that, it got buried. Now, Netflix did a push and they got it out there and got it seen by critics. And so they got a little bit of traction for Mudbound, but most people haven't seen Mudbound because it didn't get a major release. And I think we also saw that with Beasts of No Nation a couple years ago. Now, it's different for Amazon because Amazon will do movies that do have a theatrical run, like Manchester by the Sea, for example. But I think that's interesting that Amazon and Netflix might be saying, you know what, we're not going to acquire straight out of Sundance, we'll just license it later. And we're actually seeing that in the international market, like the movie Annihilation, which is that Natalie Portman sci-fi movie that comes out sometime this spring. And that's internationally going straight to Netflix. I mean, it's going to be theatrically in the States here, but internationally, it's going to be straight to Netflix, which is odd. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I teased a little bit of Ant-Man and the Wasp, and so I wanted to talk about that and throw the new trailer, which dropped this week.
I do some dumb things, and the people I love the most, they pay the price.
Thanks to you, we had to run. We're still running.
Let's go.
Maybe you just need someone watching your back. Like a partner.
Hold on. You gave her wings?
And blasters.
So I take it you didn't have that tech available for me.
No, I did.
This one opens on July 6th, and it's going to be a big tentpole, one of the last tentpoles for the summer. It's also interesting because this comes out after Infinity War. And that's going to be a heavy, serious movie. Now, the trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp makes it look more whimsical, a little more funny, like the original Ant-Man was, which was kind of a relief. Because if you recall, the first Ant-Man came out the same summer as the sequel to The Avengers. So it was neat to see something a little more whimsical, a little more lighthearted, and this one looks equally silly and cartoony. And that's one of the things I like about the Marvel movies is they don't mind going a little bit whimsical and silly, and especially for certain characters. And I think we're going to get a fun movie to bookend the more serious, dour Avengers Infinity War. I'm looking forward to this one. Also opening on July 4th weekend, which will be opening on July 4th, is this new movie that a teaser just dropped this week for.
What makes America great? The answer's simple, really. Americans make America great. You are the lifeblood of the nation, and your rights as Americans must be safeguarded. There's only one solution to keep our country great, a new tradition. Participate today, and nothing will make you prouder than when your boy looks up at you and says, "Dad, I want a purge too."
Yes, this is the first Purge. Now, I know if this one touches on to politics, but, you know, the Purge movies have always dealt with political stuff. Not very well. I think the Purge movies have tended to be very heavy-handed. This is not directed by the same guy, so I don't know. It's obviously playing off of, you know, some things that are going on in politics. And so, you know, don't be a snowflake. You deal with the fact that they're making a movie that's going to be possibly interfering with your own personal political views. The Purge movies have always been better in concept than they have in execution. And this one's about the first Purge. And I do think it's kind of neat that they made a movie that felt like an election type ad or a patriotic ad and then turns into a Purge. But hey, you know, that's what they've always been about. And they did the election year during the election year. And again, that was a kind of a crappy version of the movie. There's so much better points you can make. And I think that this Purge, I don't know if this Purge movie is going to be any good, but I get a kick out of these marketing campaigns that are very directed at a political base, and especially if a political base gets upset at them, it's Hollywood, what do you expect? That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Scorched Earth and A Fantastic Woman.
And the Magnificent!
We'll be right back.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some movies that are new to the... These are actually are new. They're not big movies. You're going to either have to search for them or find them on demand. But these are actually releasing this weekend. And it's funny because Super Bowl weekend, they tend not to release a lot of big stuff because you lose an entire Sunday. But you do get some smaller ones that are eking in the theaters. Now, one of them is Scorched Earth. Which is, it's in some theaters, you'd have to check, but I believe it's also on demand, so anybody can watch it without getting up off the couch, quite literally. And in Scorched Earth, Gina Carano plays a bounty hunter after apocalyptic climate change, seeking revenge on a warlord in what is left of America.
What makes you so different than the bounties you drag in here?
I'm still above ground.
You seen the latest bulletin?
Sure. Tom Jackson.
Biggest bounty the authorities ever offered. They took over a settlement. Made it a safe haven for lawbreakers. Most of them have a bounty on their head. You're wondering if you can take them alone. You can.
I think you're pretty smart, don't you?
At some point, your luck's going to run out.
Sometimes it's good to admit when you've been beat.
What are the odds?
The post-apocalyptic movies have been around for a long time. In 70s, 80s, they got really popular in the 80s, and there's a reason for that. First of all, you had in the 80s, you had the threat of nuclear war, you had the Cold War, and so everybody was waiting for a nuclear holocaust or some sort of fallout, and that's how you get movies like the original Mad Max. So they're also popular because they're relatively cheap to make. It doesn't take much to do something post-apocalyptic because all you need is like a desert, and there's plenty of deserts in California. In the last 15, 20 years, a lot of that has been moved to like Romania. So it's a relatively inexpensive movie to produce because you just need rags and destroyed equipment, and you usually don't have to have too much special effects. And this one plays off of the Wild West kind of movie. It's a Western, and it's at its core... Scorched Earth is a Western, and it at times overplays that. I mean, it's kind of like when, if you remember the show Firefly and then the movie Serenity, I know this whole thing is supposed to be playing off of Westerns. They get a little heavy-handed in that by having them say Reckon a lot. But this one reminds me a lot of those movies from the 80s, and you saw them, especially like when they were like direct-to-video or made for the Sci-Fi Channel. There are a lot of post-apocalyptic movies, and this is one that feels, it's just now it's climate change. It's always whatever is sort of in the discussion at the time. Right now, nuclear holocaust is kind of coming back, but right now the thing that people focus on is climate change, and they're saying, oh, that's something that can cause a global catastrophe. And back in the 80s, it was in the 90s, it was nuclear holocaust. And things will be different. You know, who knows? Maybe it's going to be Tide Pods for movies made in the 2020s. So you don't expect much from this one because it looks like it's low budget and it's a small film. And it stars Gina Carano. And I have no problem with her trying to do an acting job. She's not a great actor. She did this movie a couple years ago after sort of coming on strong with films like Haywire and even being in the Fast and Furious franchise. And then she did this, it was a small movie where she was trying to find her husband who was kidnapped. And she actually did some acting in that one, and she was okay. She got some development in her acting skills. But this is her sort of trying to do her, she's basically trying to do what Schwarzenegger and Dwayne Johnson had done and going into action movies. And she never really got there. So she's kind of more along the level of Dolph Lundgren at this point, where Dolph Lundgren was famous in the 80s. But any movie that stars Dolph Lundgren is going direct to video or is on demand. And don't expect great acting from her because she's not a good actor. I mean, she's attractive. But she's not a good actor at all. And it's painfully obvious in this movie. And the story's okay. I mean, it's cliche. They do kind of overplay the Western element. And there's certain things in there that just look goofy. Like the fact it's supposed to be the post-apocalyptic world and everything's destroyed. Yet there are fresh tarps you can find. So anyways, you don't expect much from this movie. Don't go in. And if you like these post-apocalyptic fake-o Western type films, without great acting or a huge amount of production value, you might enjoy this one. I didn't think it was that great. So I'm going to give it a kind of sucks, but, you know, kind of your mileage may vary on this one.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about A Fantastic Woman. There's no trailer for this one because it's in Spanish. Unless you don't understand what they're saying anyways. There's no subtitles on the radio. There's no subtitles. You can't subtitle the radio. So, A Fantastic Woman is a Chilean movie, And it's Oscar nominated. It's about a transgender woman who faces scorn and persecution after her older boyfriend dies unexpectedly. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this movie is it takes them a while to get to the transgender element to it. You know, when you first start watching it, you don't realize that the main woman is transgender. You sort of get hints to it. And then they kind of point it out, but it's not like a crying game moment. It's not like a big shocker at the end or something like that. So that's not giving anything away. It's really a story about an awkward situation that is going to cause problems with the family already, because the guy that she was with, he had been married, and then he left his wife and his family to be with this transgender woman. But you get guys leaving families all the time to be with a cis woman, and it causes all problems with the family anyway. So it's this awkward problem because they don't want her coming to the funeral. They don't want her coming to the wake. But generally in a heterosexual cisgender romance, you're going to get that whenever there's an affair. I mean, I've literally known people who've involved in a family where there was an affair and they don't want the mistress coming to the funeral. So that's there. But then it's complicated by the fact that it's a trans woman, and it's her story of dealing with the problems that she runs into. And, you know, it's Chilean, so you got Chilean culture. It's different than American culture and the way Americans handle it, but you still get bigotry and you still get very aggressive, unsavory actions by people. And, you know, you do see sort of like the persecution doubled down on this woman, not just from the family, but because the guy died. I think he has a stroke or an aneurysm, and so there, you know, and he falls down the stairs, and the police are worried that she's trying to rob him and that she had been running a scam on him, and they're overly suspicious because she's trans and they think she's a prostitute even though she's not. So it's kind of hard to discern what she's being persecuted for, whether it's because she's trans or because of the situation that it is, and that there's an affair or potential infidelity. But yeah, I mean, it shows this is the next step. You know, you have in our culture, and whether you like it or not, this is what's going on in our culture. And I'm talking about globally even, but there's been a more of an acceptance for gays. And then the next step is, you know, some acceptance for trans. And you're starting to see that, whether you like it or not. I mean, you can sit there and push against it as a person with your own belief system. But this is what's happening in the culture, certainly in the Western culture right now. So this is sort of bringing light to that. And it falls into the category of LGBT films. I think it's a better LGBT film than you got with Call Me By Your Name. Because I think this is the greater persecution that's happening right now. And so I think that it's a significant movie. It's a bit slow moving at times, but like a foreign films, I was going to say European, but it's Chilean. So it's South American, but for a foreign film, they tend to take things at a much slower, subdued pace. And so you do get that with this movie, but still, I'm going to say that A Fantastic Woman kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Winchester and Bilal, a new breed of hero. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. The next one in line is Winchester. Helen Mirren stars as firearm heiress Sarah Winchester, who continually builds on her mansion to keep the spirits of those killed by the weapons at bay.
It's a gargantuan seven-storied structure with no apparent rhyme or reason. Each maze of halls more confusing than the next.
It's under never-ending construction. It was built on the orders of a grieving widow.
You want to take it away from her?
We're worried about her sanity, Dr. Price.
Do you believe in ghosts?
This movie kind of fascinated me. I first saw a trailer for it. I think it was when they played Jigsaw back in October or something. And I went and saw that, and they had a trailer for this ahead of it. And I said, that's really cool. Because I remember watching, like, as a kid, this Unsolved Mysteries episode about the Winchester Mansion. And the Winchester Mansion is fascinating on its own right, because she kept building on this home, partly, they thought, out of guilt, because the Winchester Company is the Winchester repeating firearms. I mean, rifles and that thing. They're well known for the West, you know, and their early weapons. And she had a lot of guilt for the people that were killed by the guns. Now, granted, you know, and this is not a Second Amendment discussion. This is the people who did it. I mean, Tony Stark has the same problem. That's what made him Iron Man. But the whole thing is that, you know, weapons and rifles can be very useful, especially if you're on a farm and you need to kill pests, like if you've got groundhogs or wolves in the area, and people will use them, you know, and also for self-protection. But yeah, do people misuse them? Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that Sarah Winchester was just fraught with guilt over the number of people that were killed by the weapons, and, you know, whether in war or in crimes, and she fixated on that. And this was a way to sort of keep them at bay. And the people at the Winchester Company wanted her not to be in charge of the company anymore. And so they wanted in the movie, I don't know how accurate the movie is, but in the movie, the board gets this psychologist played by Jason Clarke to go assess her and say, is she of sound mind and body or not? Because they want to get the company out from under her because she had 51% of the company. So it's a great concept, because the Winchester House is considered one of the most haunted houses in America, and it's off-putting to be in, and it's confusing, and it's a fascinating story. And then you throw in Helen Mirren. I mean, Helen Mirren is not just some two-bit actress. She's not somebody who's making her way up in the world. I mean, she's an Oscar-winning actress. She literally has a movie in release right now called The Leisure Seeker that she was nominated for a Golden Globe for. And I mean, she's got an award film currently in theaters, and then she comes out with this movie at the beginning of February. I think it's just fascinating. I love actors and actresses that don't think so highly of themselves that they won't do something fun and silly and stupid sometimes. Now, I'm not talking about somebody like Nicolas Cage, who made a lot of business decisions, and now he has to take every single opportunity that comes to him and make every movie just because he needs to make money. I'm talking about somebody like, back in the day, Jeffrey Rush. I love Jeffrey Rush as an actor. And yeah, he did he's Barbossa in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and those are sort of like payday movies. But I remember, you know, he wins the Oscar for Shine, and he does movies like Mystery Men as Casanova Frankenstein. I love the fact that they take risks and they aren't just doing the safe movies. They're not just doing award film after award film after award film. Now, somebody like Meryl Streep, there was this moment in the 90s when she was doing stuff like She-Devil and Death Becomes Her, but it's movies like this that you don't tend to see somebody like Meryl Streep. Part of it's because she gets a lot of good roles. But I love the fact that Helen Mirren's in this movie. So there's all that great stuff behind it. This great story, and it's atmospheric, and it's done in such a way that it plays off of the James Wan ghost story type stuff, like Conjuring and Insidious. But it also harkens back to the old Hammer days, you know, so it kind of has this feel of something that you would have seen in the 1970s or 1960s with Peter Cushing or Christopher Lee. And Jason Clarke's fine in it. I don't have any problem with the actors. Jason Clarke I'm not a huge fan of, but he's fine in the movie. The problem is that they just kind of forgot to put a story to it. Once you get past the premise that she believes the house is haunted by the spirits of those killed by Winchester firearms, there's no story there. There is. I mean, there's characters and stuff, but they're not interesting, and they're not really terribly likable, for that matter. And the stuff that they do throw at you that's character development stuff, mostly with Jason Clarke's character, it's cliched and been done before and not interesting and corny and silly. And even their execution of non-special effect ghosts, you know, it's not as good as it could have been. I mean, it's not done with the effort and nuance that James Wan tends to do. There's just nothing to it. It's sort of like Hollywood was like, oh, we have this great concept in this. We're going to build this great set, and we got Helen Mirren in it. And, you know, it's this beautiful idea of this haunted mansion. Do we have a story? Do we have plot? Nah, that'll just write itself. And I think this movie shows how Hollywood does not prioritize scripts over casting, release date, concept and pitch. So ultimately, Winchester kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Bilal, a new breed of hero. This animated film tells the story of Bilal, a slave in ancient Mecca, who seeks freedom and equality for all races.
There is only one god of this city, and it is money.
Kneel.
Brother, did he harm you?
You were free once. Were you not?
I was. Once.
I have chosen to spread the message of equality.
Are there any traitors in my house?
Great men are those who choose their own destiny.
Well, reveal yourself.
My chains are off.
I'm not an expert in the Middle East or Middle Eastern culture. I'm not an expert in Islamic culture. But I did a modicum of research on this in the sense that I looked it up on Wikipedia. Bilal is a real person. He existed like 1,400 years ago, and he's known for being he was one of the confidants of Muhammad. He was in Muhammad's crew. Now, usually when you see something that takes place in sort of a sword and sandal time, it's either an epic movie or it's a biblical film. This is neither. It's epic, but it's not like Ben-Hur or something like that. But this has roots in Islam because it takes place in Mecca. That's where, and this is a guy who was a confidant and a friend of Muhammad. Now it makes it difficult because you're not supposed to depict Muhammad in form on in pictures or video or anything like that. That's considered taboo. That's part of what got Charlie Hebdo in trouble. I think also because they depicted him in sometimes very crass situation. And that led to the active shooter incident that happened to the Charlie Hebdo office. It's also what caused the problem for South Park several years ago when they weren't allowed to show Muhammad. Now, they had shown Muhammad in one thing that nobody cared about when it got hit the radar. There are people, you know, and supposedly that's not supposed to be done so in this movie, it's done from an Islamic perspective, but they can't address the Muhammad stuff because you can't have Muhammad show up. But this does tell the story. This is sort of like doing a movie about Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John without having Jesus show up. It's a true story about this guy trying to break his bonds and gain freedom and the significant and impact he had on the world and his religion and his culture. So it's an interesting movie. It's well animated. The animation's not top notch. I mean, you're not talking, you know, at the level that you would if it were produced by like DreamWorks or Pixar, but it's certainly a decent level of CGI, and it has some very innovative scenes in it, which are somewhat abstract, and that's kind of cool. So, I mean, it's a good movie. It gets a little bit violent, especially near the end. So if you're talking about it just because it's animated, you might want to think twice for a kid's movie because it does have battle sequences and people do get killed. But I thought it was a neat movie. It's uplifting and I think it tells a good story and, it's worth checking out. So I'm going to give Bilal, A New Breed of Hero, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to do a Fat Guy 5 for the Super Bowl, talk about the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Geostorm. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl weekend has such an impact on a lot of things. It's not just football or television. It pervades everything. It's one of the biggest TV events ever. It's one of the most watched things on the planet. And it affects Hollywood. And the reason it affects Hollywood, not just because you can make Super Bowl stories or make a movie about the Super Bowl, but it affects Hollywood because they don't release things on Super Bowl weekend that they think are going to make tons of money. Super Bowl weekend is not the time to release a tentpole film. Now, we've got like 50 Shades Freed comes out next weekend. They expect that to be somewhat big. They're not going to release that on Super Bowl weekend, even though it's geared towards a female audience. They're not going to release Black Panther the first weekend of February because that's the Super Bowl, and that's going to cut into the general mainstream audience that's going to be going to see that. Super Bowl basically kills theaters for Sunday. Yeah, you got people going Friday night. Yeah, you got people going Saturday. But Sunday, people, you're either watching the game in the evening, or you're going to somebody's place to watch the game, or you're having a party, or you're getting ready for a party, or you're cooking food, or you're doing pregame stuff, or you're shopping. People are plenty busy on Super Bowl Sunday. So they tend to just do smaller movies. That's why we only have one major release, which is Winchester. And even then, it's just this crappy little horror film. Now, I'm not a football guy, and I don't have a horse in this race either. I imagine if the Browns ever made it to the Super Bowl, because my family's from Cleveland, I'd at least have a passing interest in that. But I don't know anybody in Philadelphia, and I've never lived in New England. The Patriots versus the Eagles is not a battle that I even think about. And that's pretty common when it comes to the Super Bowl. So what my family has always done, we always have a Super Bowl-type party. We always make food. We always have snacks. But we don't watch the Super Bowl. What I do is I watch movies. We do some sort of a movie marathon. Now, it goes all the way back to the first time we did this was 5 years ago. We did our own Super Bowl, and that was we watched all the Superman movies over the course of the weekend. There are two rules I have when you do something like this, if you want to do something like this for your family. First of all, you watch everything. I mean, if it's a TV show, obviously you can't watch seven seasons or something in a weekend. But if you're watching all the Superman movies, watch all the Superman movies, even the ones you don't like. Yes, watch Superman 3. Yes, absolutely watch Superman 4. Look around and find Supergirl and watch that. Why? Because that's kind of how the movies work. And broaden your horizons a bit. Make yourself watch those. And you can goof around and watch them. But we watched all the Christopher Reeve movies. We watched Superman. But also, the other rule I have is go find extra stuff. Don't just watch the movies. You know, if you're going to watch, when we watch the Superman movies, I got the cartoons. I got the old Max Fleischer cartoons. You can't watch all of that because there's a lot of them out there. I showed them Superman and the Mole Man, which has George Reeves in it. We watched the original serial from the 40s with Kirk Allen as Superman. And then we also watched some cartoons, some Warner Brothers cartoons. So watch stuff that has to do with it. When we did Planet of the Apes, I didn't just watch all the Planet of the Apes movies. And yes, watch all of them. I tracked down the old TV show Planet of the Apes, which is not good, but still, it was fun to watch. So that's the first Fat Guy 5. These are no particular order. They're not in the best or worst. Second one is Riff Tracks. We watch a lot of Riff Tracks movies because we like, oh, we're going to have fun. Now, when it comes to Riff Tracks or Mystery Science Theater, you can kind of piece them together. There's very few football movies to kind of work with, but you maybe can find some. And there's also ones like Gus, or which is the one about a mule playing football, or off-kilter football movies like Heaven Can Wait, or Victory. Victory is about football. It's not American football, but it's about soccer. Part 3, Lord of the Rings. We watched the Lord of the Rings series. Now, if you're going to throw The Hobbit in there, that's going to take more than a weekend, because that's like 6 movies and they're all like 3 hours long. But we watched Lord of the Rings over Super Bowl weekend once. Last year, we did the Austin Powers films, which was fun. And again, I found little bits and pieces, extra stuff, videos online that you can get from YouTube that had to do with Austin Powers. So we watched those. And then this year, part 5, we're watching the Matrix movies, which is great because there's actually an old Super Bowl ad with the Matrix featuring Morpheus. And you can get all the ads online. They show up that night. But, yeah, I find it fun to just have a party that night. And so we're going to be doing that this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's look real quickly at the box office. Last week, the big surprise was Maze Runner, The Death Cure actually managed to win, even though it was a terrible movie. But it won soft too. It made under $25 million, which compared to the other two movies, that's actually a decent hold. But it's still having diminishing returns. So that one beat out Jumanji. Jumanji made $16 million. And Hostels actually did pretty well in a wide release. It did $10 million, which is actually kind of impressive for what that movie was. And that's it. I mean, we're going to be looking at more low numbers until the next 2 weeks are going to be bigger because significant movies are opening that week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I wanted to focus on a movie that came out last week. It was a movie I've been wanting to see, and not because it was good or it even looked good. It just fascinated me. I love bad movies. I love train wreck movies. Movies that are potentially so bad they're good. And Geostorm, what's funny about Geostorm is I usually get an opportunity to request videos from studios that I want to cover. I say, that looks interesting. Can you send it to me? And I'll talk about it on the radio show because it has some interest to me. I missed the window to request Geostorm. I've been wanting to see it because it looks terrible. Part of it stars Jim Sturgess, and that guy never cuts his hair. He's the same doggone hairstyle in every freaking movie he does, which is stupid. Why would you cast somebody who won't change their hairstyle? You have an entire department on a film that does that. So I missed my opportunity to request Geostorm. So, and then by the time it was, I was like, can I still request? How bad is it if I request it late? So I just said, I'll rent it. And I watched it, which is why I didn't cover it last week. But I had two to cover last week. Geostorm, when a network of weather-controlling satellites start to malfunction, it's up to the system's designer to travel into space to save the world.
One of our thermospheric satellites malfunctioned over Afghanistan.
So your proposal is what?
We shut down all satellites.
I don't need to remind all of you how many people died from catastrophic climate conditions.
Make sure there's no further incidents.
This wasn't a malfunction. It was intentional.
There's potential for catastrophic weather events on a global scale. A geostorm.
Somebody explain to me why Gerard Butler still gets movies that are hitting the theaters. We had Den of Thieves the other week. We had Geostorm. This guy still is making movies that are getting released, and they're terrible films. And I love Gerard Butler. I think he's a great guy. I've interviewed him before. He's very fun to work with. He came on so strong in America because he'd been doing roles in the UK for years. But it wasn't, you know, it was about 10, 11 years ago when they had 300 come out, and that made him an international star. And he was real big for a while there, and then he's doing kind of garbage. But the garbage still gets released in theaters. I mean, he ranks higher than Nicolas Cage at this point, which is kind of terrifying. But Geostorm is awful, and it's directed and written by Dean Devlin, and Dean Devlin's best known for being the production partner with Roland Emmerich, and they did stuff like Independence Day and The Day After Tomorrow and all these movies, and eventually Roland Emmerich kind of went off and started doing his own stuff, and he went and did, they did the Independence Day sequel, but Roland Emmerich did other stuff, and it changed once Dean Devlin wasn't involved. He's deleted stuff like Anonymous. But this feels like Dean Devlin's like, I can do the big budget action movies, disaster films as well. And this decidedly shows that he cannot. Geostorm is a terrible movie. It is nonsensical. It has a terrible cast, terrible characters. Ed Harris is in this movie. I don't know why, because he ranks way higher than this. You got Andy Garcia playing the president. You've got Abby Cornish playing the love interest to Jim Sturgess. And Abby Cornish is best in my mind now. I will always remember her for her nonsensically stupid accent in Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. So she's terrible in it. This is just a terrible movie. But you know what? It's a lot of fun to watch. It is a lot of fun to watch. This is a movie like Independence Day Resurgence. I could probably do a double feature of both of these with the help of some adult beverages and have a rip-roaring good time making fun of it with my kids. They are not good movies, but they are weirdly entertaining, as ludicrous and stupid as they are. Because in this movie, do you know what the big, I'm going to spoil something here with it. Their plan to restart these weather satellites that control the weather, taking a nod from Superman 3. Satellites don't control the weather. Satellites just report the weather and gather data. But anyways, in this movie, their big idea is the IT crowd solution. Turn it off and turn it back on again, which is hilarious to me. This movie's terrible, but wildly exciting to watch and fun and stupid at the same time. But Geostorm still gets a sucks.
It sucks.
Other movies that are out on a home cinema this week include Professor Marston and the Wonder Women, Last Flag Flying, Death Race Beyond Anarchy, and of course, Tyler Perry's Boo 2, A Madea Halloween. How did that get passed up for an Oscar nomination? That is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about 50 Shades Free and Peter Rabbit. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.